WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Monday, Halloween. That's right, it is October 31st, 2016. Can you believe that Halloween is already here? Yeah, many folks are already dressed up, and kids across the entire state, heck, across this entire nation, will be trick-or-treating. Oh, boy, that brings back fine, fine memories, folks. So we will bring to you a very special Halloween edition of WKAR's Current Sports today. As we will dive into one of my favorite segments we've done in the past. We did this 2 years ago, actually, but we're going to give you a list of the all-time scariest athletes, all right? You don't want to miss that. In addition to this Halloween edition of Current Sports, we will also dive into what took place on Saturday afternoon at Spartan Stadium, the Michigan State football team falling to the University of Michigan, Michigan snapping that three-game losing streak, the first win for the Wolverines against the Spartans on the gridiron dating back to 2012. We'll have plenty of coverage from that game, including locker room interviews, and you'll get to hear what Coach D'Antonio had to say. Also, we will chat about the Detroit Lions, who fell on the road to the Texans. Yes, the Honolulu Blue and Silver were certainly rolling, even had a bit of a win streak going on, but the Texans had other plans on Sunday. And we'll have weekend winners for you. All of that and more. If you want to be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR _sports. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start with more bad news for Michigan State football from Saturday's game. Redshirt freshman quarterback Brian Lewerke is out for the year after he suffered a broken tibia in the fourth quarter of the 32-23 loss to Michigan. Now, the injury happened when Lewerke was sacked by Jabril Peppers on fourth down and is expected not to require surgery, according to head coach Mark D'Antonio. But Lewerke is out for the season, folks. All right, moving along here. MSU is taking some heat after MSU linebacker Chris Fry was helped off the field after a helmet-to-helmet shot during Saturday's loss to U of M. And then back two plays later, on the field. Now, Chris Nowinski, co-founder and executive director of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, tweeted his outrage at MSU by saying, quote, "Shameful. MSU number 23 can't stand up after brutal helmet-to-helmet hit. Back in the game 2 minutes, no concussion evaluation." Nowinski tweeted, addressing it to the accounts of the Big Ten and the NCAA Sports Science Institute, along with the hashtag Brains for Brains. Now, MSU head coach Mark D'Antonio's response when asked if Fry got assessed for a concussion, he said, quote, "Yes, I assume that he did, because we have Dr. David Kaufman on the sidelines to do just that." D'Antonio went on to say, "Fry was never diagnosed with a possible concussion or anything like that, but yeah, he took a shot. There's no question about that," end quote. All right, the preseason college basketball poll was released this morning with Duke as a heavy number one. MSU comes in at number 12, the third highest of any Big Ten team, with Wisconsin at number 9 and Indiana sitting at number 11. Other Big Ten teams ranked include Purdue at 15 and Maryland at 25. The number 13th ranked MSU men's soccer team had their three-game win streak come to a stop on Sunday afternoon when they were edged by number 10 Indiana 2-1. In the last game of the regular season, the Spartans and the Hoosiers played a pretty even game. Indiana scored first in the first 23 minutes into the game, but MSU had an answer just under 10 minutes later when sophomore forward Ryan Sierakowski delivered his team-leading ninth goal of the year. Then, with just 4 minutes left, Indiana's Tanner Thompson would score the eventual game winner. MSU finished the season 12-4-1 and 4-3-1 in the Big Ten, earning them the number 4 seed in the upcoming Big Ten tournament. The Spartans will get this for the first time in program history, host a Big Ten tournament game this Sunday at 1 p.m. against Penn State. Very cool stuff. We'll have more coverage on the MSU men's soccer team as the week proceeds here on Current Sports. But a big, big honor for Damon Rensing and his squad. Both the MSU men's and women's cross-country teams have something to celebrate. They both finished in the top 5 in the Big Ten cross-country championships. The women's team finished 3rd overall, led by seniors Alexis Wiersma and Rachel Shulis. Now, Wiersma finished 5th, earning her first team All-Big Ten. Shulis finished the race 9th, naming her to the second team All-Big Ten. The men finished 2nd overall, led by senior Sherrod Hart and redshirt freshie Ryan Robinson. Now, Hart finished the race 2nd, earning him first-team All-Big Ten accolades, while Robinson, who is just coming back from a midseason injury, finished 11th, naming him second-team All-Big Ten. Both the men and the women continue their championship season at the NCAA Great Lakes Regionals in Madison, Wisconsin, which will begin on November 11th. The Detroit Lions' 3-game win streak is kaput. That's right after falling 20-13 to the Houston Texans on Sunday. Now, the loss drops the Lions to 500 on the year at 4-4. Detroit was silenced offensively for most of the game as they scored just 3 points through the first 3 quarters of the game. Theo Riddick was the lone standout on the day with 56 rush yards and 77 receiving yards and accounted for the lone touchdown. The Lions will look to bounce back versus the Minnesota Vikings this weekend. And the Vikings will actually be in action on Monday Night Football tonight against the Chicago Bears. Both Andre Drummond and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had stellar games last night during the Detroit Pistons' 98-83 win over the Milwaukee Bucks. Drummond had 20 points and 23 rebounds, an average 20-20 game for him, while Kentavious Caldwell-Pope added 21 points as Detroit won its 2nd straight game to improve to 2-1 on the year. The Pistons close out a 3-game homestand tomorrow against the Knicks. The Detroit Red Wings dropped a 2nd straight decision, falling to the Florida Panthers 5-2 to drop to 6-4 on the year. Cloten Sevior scored a hat trick against the Wings, including 2 first period goals, 23 seconds apart to jump the Panthers out to a quick lead. Dylan Larkin and Brendan Smith both got on the score sheet for the Wings in the loss. Detroit will look to end the skid when they travel to Philly on Wednesday. And last but certainly not least, it was do or die for the Chicago Cubs at home last night as they fought for survival in the World Series, defeating Cleveland 3-2. A close one, folks. The Cubs fell behind early, then rallied with a 3-run 4th inning, which started with a Chris Bryant solo shot. Now, the Indians would pull within 1, but Cubs closer Aroldis Chapman would silence the Indian bats with an 8-out save, allowing no base runners. The series will now head back to Cleveland, where Game 6 takes place Tuesday at 8. The Cubs will start Jake Arrieta, while the Indians will go with Josh Tomlin. Those are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. As I mentioned, you can also weigh in via social media, facebook.com/currentsports, or tweet us at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin WKAR. Here we go.
afraid of no games.
U of M has finally snapped the three-game losing streak to its rival in Michigan State. And many Spartan fans out there now ask, what do the Spartans play for now? Some have even already turned off the lights for this team. Literally.
Run the ball pretty effectively against them in the fourth quarter. That's better. That just figures. That's the way the day's going right there. Yeah. About time for everybody to leave. Turn the lights off on me.
Well, that challenge now rests on leadership. How do you make sure this team doesn't emotionally check out?
Yeah, my job is to keep guys motivated. I'm more motivated than ever, so it's not going to be a problem for me. So, you know, we just got to keep coming into work every day and trying to get better. And I think, you know, I hope guys gain some confidence today. You know, we played a great Michigan team, and, you know, sometimes we're doing great, and sometimes we weren't. You know, but there's things you can learn from it.
Play for pride. You know, we don't back down from anything. You know, I don't care if whatever happens in the game, you got to finish like, you know, that clock strikes zero. You need to do what you need to do as an individual to help this team. There's no, you know, finger pointing, it's thumb pointing.
How's the locker room? It's like any other locker room after you lose a football game. You know, it's tough, especially for our senior group. You know, that's the first time that our senior groups have lost that game. So I think we'll be ready to play next week. I don't think we have guys that quit.
Because this week it's easy to get hype, and play Michigan, you know, especially when we feel disrespected every time we go play them. I mean, obviously, you know, our record didn't show coming into this game this year, but every year, you know, we kind of feel disrespected, you know, by anybody. But so it's easy to get hyped for this week, but you know, this week's going to be tougher than ever to get everybody hyped up. But I think what you saw today in today's game was a lot of fight, a lot of character from a lot of guys.
As Paul Bunyan now gets cozy in his new home out in Ann Arbor, Michigan State will hit the road next week. Try and pick up the pieces against Illinois.
Think you better call Ghostbusters. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters. I can't hear you. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters. Louder. Ghostbusters. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters.
Oh man, the classic theme song of the Ghostbusters movie. Love that, folks. It's Halloween. It is Halloween, October 31st, 2016. I really hope that all of you out there are having a fun one. Be safe. I know there'll be a lot of kids trick-or-treating tonight, stacking up that candy. It's funny because, you know, I would always try to maximize when I was younger, when I used to go trick-or-treating. Of course, I'm a grown man now. Don't do that anymore. If you're a grown man trick-or-treating, you got a problem, all right? But anyway, when I was younger, Isaac, I would try to maximize as much as possible the amount of candy I would get from door to door to door. So when my mom would take my sister Dominique and I out, I would actually take, and it was actually her idea, it was genius, my mother's idea to take a pillowcase, because you can fit so much candy in a pillowcase. So we would just get like two huge pillowcases and just go door to door to door. Don't go and, you know, buy the plastic pumpkin, you know, carry around that you see at Walmart, because that thing fills up really, really quick. And then what do you do when it fills up? What are you going to do? Where are you going to put the candy at? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we would just get two huge pillowcases and just go out door to door to door. And probably my favorite costume when I was younger, I used to be the biggest fan of Power Rangers when I was little. And my favorite Power Ranger was the blue Power Ranger, because blue is my favorite color. So, you know, Billy, the Blue Power Ranger, he was my favorite one. And I dressed up as the Blue Power Ranger one year and went out. And I don't know why, but that memory right there is my favorite Halloween memory, because we got so much candy that year. And I would ring the doorbell. You know, we would say, you know, trick or treat. Then I would do like a kung fu move. And it was, you know, I'm like 6 years old. So it would look cute. And then be, oh, my God, he's such a cute Power Ranger. And they would just dump candy in the pillowcase, man. Huh. Great memories, though, dude. What's your favorite costume from when you were younger?
My best ever would probably be a homemade one from my grandma which was me being a dinosaur when I was in kindergarten. It was a homemade costume. I have no idea how she did it, but she tailored this for me. It was a really nice dinosaur costume. Kind of looked like a mix of Godzilla and a T-Rex. So that was a really good one. I was also a Power Ranger.
How does she make a dinosaur costume? That, I thought you were going to say, you know, when you said homemade, the immediate cop-out costume that comes to mind is you just get a sheet, cut some eye holes in it, and you got a ghost,
yeah,
all right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of kids in the hood where I'm from, they do that all the time. You know what I mean? It's real
I've
simple,
never gone
cheap.
That cheap. Yeah. No, I've always gone, you know, it's New Orleans. You got to do it up a little bit. So I went dinosaur. Then, you know, if we're throwing in all sorts of costumes, for Mardi Gras once, I was Lil Wayne. That got a few views.
Oh, my gosh.
That got quite
serious?
A few pictures.
Do you have pictures of this?
I do.
Please, we need to post that. ASAPual to our current sports Facebook page. Please, Isaac, please dig up that right now. Okay? I need to see this. You were Lil Wayne, dude.
I was Lil Wayne.
Did you, like, mark up yourself with tattoos everywhere?
Yeah. So my dad got one of those, you know, chalk pens or whatever it is, and he drew the tattoos all over my face. I had Fear God on my eye, on my eyelids and all that.
My gosh.
I went all out. I had, what I did too is, because I couldn't find any good grills for sale that were
my goodness.
Cheap. So I went vampire teeth, and then I wrapped tinfoil around it.
Oh,
and it
my
hurt like all heck.
You went all out. Please post this picture, okay? We also have current sports production assistant Ashley Gibbard in the house. And Ash, I don't know, we were just chatting about Halloween before we took the air here, and I was just saying how it's really crazy up here at Michigan State, because when you talk about Halloween at Michigan State, you know, students literally party from like Thursday all the way to Sunday, but you enlightened me and said that they'll probably be out tonight, seeing as though tonight is actual Halloween. They're still going to be partying on a Monday night. Crazy stuff. Ash, what is your favorite Halloween costume that you grew up with wearing?
Actually, now that I think about it, today it would be frowned upon because it was a clown.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's spooky. Seen,
yeah, and we've seen clowns all up in the news now. Yeah, that probably would be frowned upon now. I'm curious how many clowns we will see tonight. So was that your favorite one, Ashley?
That was the one I got the best response out of, but I think I was walking around my neighborhood and all the little kids were terrified of me. So I felt kind of bad, but it was a great costume.
I love that. And folks, I want to pose out there, you know, what is your favorite Halloween costume that you've ever worn? I'm very curious. I saw some good ones actually via social media over the weekend, okay? And which would be pretty tough to beat. But I want to know, what's your favorite Halloween costume that you've ever had throughout your years here on planet Earth, all right? I'm curious. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Going to be taking calls in about 5 minutes. Before we take calls, I want to get this off my chest. I want to dive into what you just heard during that montage of I Ain't Afraid of No Ghost, Ghostbusters theme. Love that song. The montage mixed in with that was, of course, our post-game coverage from Saturday afternoon's game between the Michigan State football team and University of Michigan. U of M, of course, pulled out the dub, the first win for this program against the Spartans in 3 years. 2012 was the last win for U of M over Michigan State. Now, I remember actually being at that 2012 game on the road, of course, in Ann Arbor at Michigan Stadium. Devin Gardner leads the team down the field, and Michigan wins on a last-second field goal. Everyone's mobbing the field. It was a chaotic atmosphere. So since 2012, this is Michigan's only win. And, when you look at this game, I see a variance of emotions from Michigan State fans and U of M fans. Now, first off, when you look at this game, I had predicted on Friday a 21-14 U of M win. But I really didn't believe it. You know, you look at the line, the Vegas line started at 18, then it moved up to 24.5 by the end of the week in favor of U of M. You talk about U of M, this is the number two college football team in the nation coming into this matchup, and still is right now, against an unranked Michigan State team who had lost 5 straight games. Logically speaking, there was really no way that Michigan State would have a chance at beating U of M, number two college football team in the nation. No way, Jose, right? But I must say, folks, Michigan State was pretty competitive in this matchup. Pretty competitive. Heck, how about the first drive, right? Which was very surprising. The first drive, Michigan State goes 75 yards, 12 plays. They take 7 minutes off the clock. That was shocking to me. And it kind of set a tone. It set a message to everyone out there that Michigan State had come to play. And they certainly did. And how, again, you look at this U of M team. I mean, they have the best defense in the nation right now. You know, coming into this matchup, U of M had allowed just 96 yards on the ground. LJ Scott was fantastic. 139 yards. He averaged a little over 6 yards per rush. Michigan State's run game was a key and a big factor as to why they were able to hang around. In total, MSU had 217 yards on the ground, little over 5 yards per rush. And heck, when you evaluate the stats, the total stats in general, U of M and MSU were pretty comparable, folks. U of M, 436 total yards. Michigan State right behind them with 401. How about time of possession? U of M, they had the football 30 minutes offensively. MSU, 29. How about first downs? U of M had 24 first downs throughout that game. Michigan State right behind at 23. The stats are so identical in so many areas. And I must say, folks, Wilton Spate is getting better, though. Week after week after week, Jim Harbaugh is known for getting quarterbacks to buy in and to really look at the fundamentals and get better. Jim Harbaugh is a quarterback guru. Wilton Spate was 16 of 25 for 244 yards. And in my estimation, who was the best player on the field, Amara Darboh was fantastic. He had 8 catches for 165 yards. Those 165 are actually the most from a receiver in this series dating back all the way to 2004 when, of course, Braylon Edwards just went off. So you look at the difference here. MSU loses by a total of 9 points to U of M, right? Get this. The Wolverines were in the red zone 6 times. This is what separates Michigan and Michigan State in this game. Wolverines in the red zone 6 times. They come through with 3 touchdowns and 3 field goals out of those 6 times in the red zone. Michigan State was in the red zone. You want to guess, Isaac, how many times was Michigan State in the red zone that weekend?
4.
6. Whew. The same amount as U of M. MSU, though, comes away with 3 touchdowns and no field goals. 3 empty possessions where Michigan State did not score in the red zone. That's the difference of the game right there. Michigan State was right there, folks. Hey, they were in prime position to make this thing really interesting if it already wasn't. They just didn't capitalize. I mean, we could talk about Michael Geiger, who wasn't great on Saturday. I mean, him missing field goals. I don't know what's up with that. But, I mean, that was a chip shot. That was like a 34-yard field goal that he missed. I mean, you got to make that. Those are the inches, quote-unquote, that Mark D'Antonio always talks about. And, you know, and I will say this, though. Even though that U of M defense was certainly tested by Michigan State, and Michigan State was able to get into a groove, U of M made some big stops. That defense made some big stops. I mean, how about the stop on the goal line? That was huge. That was huge, folks. And something that really puzzled me, and I had this conversation with our very own Brad Walker earlier on this day. Michigan State, multiple times throughout this year, has gone away from formulas that have proved successful throughout the course of a game. I always bring up the moment that still blows my mind against BYU, when Michigan State had Tyler O'Connor throwing the football 8 times on the opening drive against Brigham Young. And they go down the field, and Gerald Holmes walks across the goal line for a touchdown. But Tyler O'Connor threw 8 times on that drive. Then the rest of the half, Tyler O'Connor throws the football once. And we all know how that game ended. Michigan State ended up losing that game. And in similar fashion, Michigan State on that first drive of the game has LJ Scott completely ripping it up on the ground. LJ Scott, they couldn't stop him. U of M had no answer for LJ Scott. And then what happens on the second drive, Isaac? He sits down and Gerald Holmes comes in the game.
Yep.
Now, Mark D'Antonio, he answered, he was asked, of course, that question as to why he did that. And he said that Gerald Holmes had earned the right to go out there and to show what he can do. But at the same time, man, if it's not broke, don't fix it. If LJ Scott is clearly having success on the ground, why take him out the football game? And then another questionable, which had everybody talking, at least amongst us media members, after that game, Michigan State, they score a touchdown. A nice floater to Donnie Corley in the end zone. Michigan State scores, right? And if they kick the field goal, they're down by a touchdown with just 1 second left. Just kick the extra point, and they're down by a touchdown with 1 second on the clock. All right, kick. Hey, we saw what happened last year out in Ann Arbor, right? Anything can happen. Football's a funny game. You know, a very low percentage chance that Michigan State was going to pull off a miracle here, but at least give your team a shot, right? Mark D'Antonio goes for two. Doesn't work out. And the pitch goes awry, and Jabril Peppers takes it the other way. Takes it the other way for two. And I sat there and I said, huh? It made no sense. Mark D'Antonio addressed that in the postgame presser, and he said, you know, quote unquote, I'm trying to find the inches here. They're trying to maximize as many opportunities to score points as possible. But in that moment, that was just a classic example in my eyes of just doing too much, trying to do too much. Just take the points. Go for the onside kick. You're probably not going to get it. You know, very low percentage chance that you're going to pull off another miracle back-to-back years, right? But still, just give yourself a chance. I didn't understand that one either. So, thoughts? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Michigan State is now a loser of 6 straight games for the first time dating back to the early 80s, folks. That's a long, long time. They will try to stop the bleeding once again against Illinois on the road this weekend. I know we got Austin online. I definitely want to get Austin's thoughts, and I want to get, you know, if any listener out there has a thought on what took place on Saturday afternoon, I would love to hear from you. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, because I feel like there's fans out there that have two perceptions here. There you have the fan that says, okay, Michigan State may have lost. Michigan State has lost 6 straight now. It's ugly, without a doubt. 2-6 is not great. But we did see some improvement. You know, this is a game in which many thought that Michigan State was going to get completely blown out of the water. But they end up losing by 9 points. I'm a person who believes there are no moral victories. I don't believe in that. You either win or you lose. But at the same time, you did see Michigan State play one of its best games of the year against U of M. I must say that. And then you have the fan of U of M who says, and I saw this a lot as well, questioning why Michigan was not able to get a blowout over Michigan State. They'll take the win without a doubt. Paul Bunyan is going to Ann Arbor. But man, Michigan State loses a 5 straight and we don't blow them out? That's a problem. I want to invite right now Ashley Gibbard to the show. We just heard from Ash about her favorite Halloween costume. And Ash, I want to get your thoughts now on MSU football. What were your takeaways from that MSU loss to U of M this weekend?
Well, I was one of those people that thought for sure it was going to be like 56-0. Like, I reluctantly went to the game just because I'm a senior and I was like, okay, this is like it. Mm-hmm. And I also come from a house divided. So I was.
Do you? Yep. Explain that. So okay. who's rooting for U of M in the household?
So I have a twin brother, and he doesn't go to U of M, but when I was 4, I said, I'm going to go to MSU. And he's like, well, I have to root for the other team because we're twins. So I've been hearing it like this is a double win for him because Michigan's great and State's terrible. Mm-hmm. So I've been hearing it all week, like, we're going to blow you out. We're going to blow you out. And then he was shaking in his boots because we had some we had some opportunity. And I was like, where was this team the entire season? Our season would have been so much better. I'm not saying we would have won every game, but it would have been a lot better. And I saw for the first time since that game against Notre Dame, I was like, we have potential. Next year, we have potential. The potential's there. We can do it. Let's go.
I hear you. And that's the thing. You know, you sit there and look at it. And I really thought Michigan State got back to a hallmark of this program that's been there, that's been a staple for this program for forever, to be honest with you, and that's toughness. Michigan State was tough, especially in that second half against U of M. That's something that really stood out to me. Isaac, what are your thoughts on this game? You were in the house covering it with me. And, you know, the immediate reaction is, yeah, MSU, who cares? They lost another one. But when you really look at the X's and O's of it, there are some things that this team can build upon moving forward here. Are they going to make a bowl game? Let's be real. No.
No.
They're not going to beat Ohio State. They're going to struggle against Penn State, I think.
Probably not going to win that one.
Right. Exactly. But there are some things. When you look at that game, you sit there and, just like Ashley said, you sit there and wonder, where was this during that five-game losing stretch?
Well, that's the thing. I went into this game with my score prediction. I'll unabashedly admit that it was 45-7 in favor of U of M. I actually thought it would be that much of a one-sided, lopsided blowout. And that didn't happen because MSU played well, and U of M didn't play up to the standard of the number two team in the nation. Simply, I see how it's so frustrating for State fans to say, boy, what if D'Antonio would have left LJ Scott in for that second drive? What if you would have got a little more creative with the play call and let Tyler O'Connor maybe play a little bit more that game, just like he led the team down on the final drive that was in that game? So I see all of the what-ifs. I see all of the couple of mistakes that some people really take issue with and say this could have been a totally different game. At the same time, MSU, in my opinion, made three or four mistakes that they shouldn't have made. I expected 15 or 16. So the thing is, this team did play above the level that it's been playing for this entire season. U of M played below it. So as much as MSU fans want to walk away from this either saying, hey, we played great, or hey, you know, we didn't play as bad as we thought we would, there is a fine line between there, which is you played just well enough to avoid the U of M fans gloating and running around with the Paul Bunyan trophy like they accomplished something amazing. Because the thing is, U of M did walk out of that a little bit like, that was a little bit closer than we thought it would be.
Oh, sir. And I thought it would, speaking of that, I thought it was a classy move for U of M to come out and bring out Paul. They could. I thought they were. I was ready to tailor my stand up.
Oh, yeah, the cameras were out and everything.
I was waiting for Paul to come out and go to the respective Michigan fans who were there or to their side of the field and celebrate. But they didn't. Thoughts, listeners, call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one right now. We've got my dear friend Austin from Grand Rapids who wants to chime in. Austin, what's up, my man?
What's up, Al? How's it going, man?
Always good hearing from your brother.
You as well, man. You had me late for work this morning up texting during that Cowboys game last night.
Yeah, it's funny because Isaac and I were just talking about this. Austin was shooting me a text as I was watching that Cowboys game. And Isaac, you saw my Snapchat. I absolutely lost my mind when the Cowboys pulled that out. But that was a fun game. That probably was my highlight of the weekend, of the sporting weekend. I'll get to that later on in the show. But yeah, Austin and I were chatting back and forth, just like, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen? That was fun.
Yeah, man, but just about Michigan State football, I'll start with the negative first. First off, my biggest disappointment from that game is Malik McDowell. You know, I kind of sat down and watched the game as if I were a scout. I'm like, all right, let me pay attention to Malik McDowell, see what he does. There were so many plays he showed absolutely no effort on that he could, where if he would have showed some effort, he would have got some big stops. I mean, there was a third down where if he would have, you know, did a swim move or a rip move through a double coverage and got his hands up, he could have batted the ball down. And then there was a third down later in the game where he got in the backfield and got a tackle and showed some fire. I'm like, Malik, where has that been all game, man? And it shows that he has the potential to be great, but he just has to channel it.
And I didn't notice it. I have to go back and really look at Malik's performance. I didn't notice.
Same.
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention to how Malik McDowell, because I know this is the thing, though, about McDowell, and you know this, Austin. I mean, he's been double-teamed. He's so good. Like you said, he has so much talent. He's been double-teamed throughout much of this year. So I'm curious to go back and see if he had opportunities to really affect the game on certain downs and in certain quarters. I have to go back and take a look at that.
Yeah, exactly. And then And just from a leadership standpoint, man, I hope that Coach D raises up leaders, man, because if you think about the year when we won the Rose Bowl, and this is more defensively, obviously we had Pat Narduzzi, but if you look at it, each level of the defense had a leader. So you had Shalit Calhoun that was the leader of the front seven. Then you had Max Bullard that was the leader of the middle of the defense. Then you had Darquez Denard that was the leader of our secondary. So if we can establish that type of leadership again on our defense, we'll be great next year because we only gave away, 3 points in the second half. So the defense did what they had to do. The positive side, man, our receivers that last couple minutes of the fourth quarter looked really good, especially that touchdown catch Corley had. I mean, he caught it like Dez Bryant did last night when Dak threw him the ball. So yeah. It goes to show if our offensive coordinator allows our quarterbacks to open up the playbook a little bit and show some confidence in them, they can get the ball down the field. And I think that was an issue. Our offensive coordinator said, in my opinion, it looked like they felt as if they didn't have the most confidence in Tyler O'Connor and Lewerke. But once they started throwing that ball down the field, R.J. Shelton got a huge catch. Corley got a good catch. Josiah Price got a couple catches. So we got to, you know, show that confidence in our quarterbacks. But I think overall, man, you never want to say it's a respectable loss, but it definitely was a respectable loss, if that's such a thing.
Considering how the year has gone thus far, entering that game against U of M, I would say so as well, Austin.
Yeah, so cool. So you know what? Hey, as your frat brother Blair Ellison said, man, rebuild, redefine, and reclaim. We'll be back next year.
I like that. Austin, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate that.
All right, talk to you later. Have a good one, Isaac.
You too, Austin.
And I think Austin makes one point I want to piggyback on when it comes to, before he hits his first break, Isaac, before I want to piggyback on the point that he made when it comes to the offensive play calling. What has been a problem this year is the inconsistency of making sure this offense has a balanced attack. It's been too heavy either run or pass on drives, if you ask me. I've seen moments where, you know, Dave Warner has decided to clearly come in with the mindset of establishing the run game, but forget about airing it out. And I've seen drives where Dave has said, okay, well, let's let Tyler O'Connor air it out, but forget about the run game. There has not been much balance for this offense. You use the run game to set up your pass game. Then you could throw out a few play actions here and there. You know what I mean? We just have not seen a balanced attack. And, you know, it's really unfortunate that Brian Lewerke, that we won't see him the rest of this season. Because I thought that when Brian came in, he was an instant spark plug for that offense.
Yes, he
was. And I'm not saying that Tyler O'Connor played a horrible in that game. But, I'm not saying it's all on his fault, per se, as to why that Michigan State offense went a bit quiet at a certain moment. And we know when they were stuck on 10. But at the same time, I thought that when Brian Lewerke came in the game, he made some great throws. How about that touchdown throw to Monty Medeiros? That was fantastic. I mean, he made some great throws. And we did see the run game a bit more during that moment as well. Balance is something that has been lacking for this Michigan State offense and is a reason why they've struggled.
And one set of plays that I have to harp on that – Tyler O'Connor should have had 2 touchdowns in that game. Correct me if I'm wrong. I did think he was the quarterback for this drive. But Michigan State has 1st and goal, ball at the 2-yard line. And you have 4 consecutive run plays. That's the most banal, drab, humdrum, ineffective, rather, play calling that you could have in a situation like that. You need to stretch the defense a little bit, make sure that they don't know what's coming. You got to keep them on your toes, and you should always score a touchdown against any opposition when you're on there too.
Brief comments as we close out this first segment from you, Ashley. I just want to know, how do you think this year finishes for Michigan State? They have 4 games left. Again, they need to win out to become bowl eligible and hit the lucky number 6, right? Do they do that?
We're not beating Ohio State. I hate to say that. I really hate to say it, but We're not. But if the defense can play like they did in the fourth quarter of that game, I think we have the capability of stopping other people's offense from this point forward. Mm. And I think that if they shake it up more, yeah, if your run game's great, obviously that's going to be your favorite, but you do have to pass and vice versa. If they can start to do that, I think we can win some more games, hopefully, this season.
I say maybe two more, maybe.
Yeah.
And I'm not even confident in saying that, but, you know, well, we'll see. And you talk about Ohio State, I mean, wow. I mean, they struggled a bit against Northwestern this past weekend, didn't they? So
yep.
we'll have more takeaways from the entire spectrum of the college football weekend that was. We'll also dive into the Detroit Lions as they have their win streak, I should say, snapped against the Houston Texans on the road. That and so much more. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. I want to also announce to you all that if you have not checked our social media pages, we have launched officially the 2-Minute Drill. Yeah, pretty exciting stuff, folks. The 2-Minute Drill is basically a 2-minute daily sports update via social media that will give you a heads up on what is taking place in Mid-Michigan sports and beyond before anybody else. We usually post it around 4 o'clock each and every day. We record it right here in Studio S at our WKAR radio studios. It's very cool. It has like a sports center type theme as it, you know, we have a graphic that moves from topic to topic to topic. Very cool stuff. So I'll be doing that on the daily now. I have a special Halloween version for you all later this afternoon. If you want to check it out, just simply go to our Facebook page at Facebook.com/currentsports, and it will also be posted on our various other social media pages via WKAR. Folks, we are taking your calls on anything on your sports noggin. We just finished up a chat about the U of M win over Michigan State at Spartan Stadium. Again, U of M's first win against the Spartans in 3 years, and actually the first win for U of M over MSU at Spartan Stadium since like 2007. Been a long, long time, folks. Let's go to line two right now. We've got Gary from East Lansing on Current Sports. Gary, how you doing?
Pretty good. I'm a longtime supporter. When I had to straighten Earl out quite often on things.
Is that right?
And so I just thought I'd help you out a little bit. And he would tend to forget pass interference begins for the offense from the huddle. A lot of people don't realize that, but from the time they know it's a pass, they're restricted. For defense, it's when the ball's in the air. And, you know, once the ball's in the air, can't touch anybody. So that's pretty straightforward. Roughing the passer, if the arm is forward and the ball's caught, he's protected. That's a flag. If you saw Terry Damian, I mean, that was a classic targeting, if there ever was one. There are three guys at the same time, the ball was long gone. You know, and three guys standing there with their flags stuck somewhere, but not in the right place.
What play are you talking about specifically, Gary?
Pardon?
Which play are you talking about specifically? What play are you referring to?
Oh, there were several of them when the flag didn't come out or the flag should have come out. And it's so straightforward, I don't know how all those can be missed. And when Damian Terry got knocked out of the game, that was so obvious. It was, mm-hmm. You know, that there was no question about that. The arm was forward, the ball was gone. If you remember back when Malik got called for targeting, he was below the shoulder pads. The
yeah.
ball was
I didn't believe, I didn't, yeah.
yet.
Right, right.
I mean, there's no consistency there at all. So,
right.
That's one of my points. The other thing is on holding is exactly when it happens, not 6 seconds later when the tailback's going in the end zone. That's not when you throw the flag, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I should tell you, I refereed from 66 to 88.
I'm
a little bit older now. But these are pretty basic. And one thing I really don't like is that the officials can't get there. If you don't know the rules and you're too slow to get down the field, you should do something different, you know, go golf or something. But don't be out there. That's my point. So,
but Gary, but you're not with your point, well taken, without a doubt. You're not putting this loss for Michigan State on the refs, are you?
Well, there's always a third team on the field. I'm just saying the game could have been a little bit different had some calls been made or not made. And you look at Damian Terrier laying there knocked out, and no flag. What the hell's going on,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. I hear you. I just don't know if the plays that you're referring to would have really made a big outcome in the final score when evaluating how this game went from top to bottom. I don't know if I can put that on the refs.
Well, that's not my point at all. My point is that in one game you see the receiver knock down the defender and catch the ball, and it's no call. Oh, it's a great play. And you watch another Big Ten game, and same thing happens, and it's pass interference. So what the hell is the consistency?
There
see
is
what I'm saying? They're,
yeah.
they're not consistent at all.
I agree with that. And I think we can say that for the last 10 years, Isaac.
No doubt. There's
been no consistency, specifically when it comes to pass interference calls. Heck, in the last 3 years, when we've seen targeting calls be caught more and more because they're trying to protect players out there due to what we're knowing about concussions and CTE and so on and so forth, they're putting an emphasis on that. There really is no consistency there either.
No, there's none. Well, that's my point anyway. Just, you know, again,
right. It
isn't soccer where you can stand, go up and down the sideline. You got to be in the middle of it. You got to get out there and run. It's just all there is to it. If you can't do that, you shouldn't be out there. So
okay.
That's my point. Yep. Thanks a lot.
Gary, thank you for calling. Appreciate that. And I think Gary makes an interesting point there. For me, when I walked away from that game and we're kind of just going through my head and analyzing it, the referees didn't come to mind.
No, they didn't. Not for me either. Damian Terry's hit, I do remember that quite vividly, and he was slopped when that happened. Damian Terry was absolutely lit up, and I can definitely see the reason for debate when it comes to that. At the same time,
now was it launching? Did he launch his helmet at him? Was it helmet to helmet? I didn't really get to see it.
Several defenders. I'm not sure exactly how you qualify that in football terms, but there were quite a few things. With that being said, the refereeing, it's always just been a fickle sport. Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. I was talking to Ryan Sierkowski of the soccer team recently, and there was one referee who he said, "You've got to watch your mouth around him because this guy will give you a red card for cursing." Mm-hmm. I'm not even kidding. That's just how some referees are. It's so all over the place. It's entirely a capricious type of officiating rule. So you've just got to know who you're dealing with, what you're dealing with, and do the best you can.
Yeah, I have to go back and look at the Damian Terrier hit because it's so, as you notice, Isaac, I mean, when shooting on the field, I was down on the field during the second half. It's so hard to see angles that you can see with a lot of clarity up in the press box because you're looking at it from a bird's eye view. So I have to look back at that play. But for me, I think at the end of the day, I mean, this wasn't a referee. It wasn't like any other game. It was just like any other game, if you ask me. You know what I mean? There weren't any calls that really stood out in my mind like, oh, my goodness, you completely blew that, you know?
Nebraska last year would have been a golden example of
referees
who did change the outcome of the game. This one, maybe a little bit different.
Right. Folks, call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. My, oh, my, time flies when you're having fun. Just 10 minutes left in the show. Just briefly, I got a few more takeaways from Week 9 of college football action. I want to let this point be known. I mean, how about Northwestern? You know, Ohio State squeaking out of that game 24-20, that was very close. And, you know, Northwestern is a team that has pushed a lot of teams this year. They are very impressive. What Pat Fitzgerald is doing out there, he's doing a great job with the Northwestern Wildcats. So, you know, you're looking at this Ohio State and Michigan State game, I think this game is going to be closer than a lot of people predict. I think that's going to be a very competitive game for Michigan State. I'm looking forward to that one. Also, when you look at the entire spectrum of here, I think that the Big 12, I think it's safe to say, Isaac, that the Big 12 is definitely out of the playoff now. You know, number 8, Baylor, and number 10, West Virginia, both squandered control of their playoff destinies with a loss Saturday on the road. The Bears, of course, fell to Texas 35-34. Longhorns running back Deontay Foreman ran all over Baylor. Get this, 250 yards. Bears quarterback Seth Russell completed just 14 of 28 passes. Oklahoma State upended West Virginia's bid for a perfect season with a 37-20 win, sparked by 273 yards passing and three touchdowns from quarterback Mason Rudolph against the typically stout Mountaineers defense. That was impressive to me. So I don't think we'll see any Big 12 teams making the college football playoff this year, Isaac. Also, Clemson and Washington, they continue to strengthen their cases when it comes to making a college football playoff, folks. Both the number 3 Tigers and number 4 Huskies face stiff tests. On the road, Clemson visited number 12 Florida State. Washington traveled to number 17 Utah. Now, for the Huskies, it was, you know, it was easily their biggest obstacle of the year when you evaluate how their schedule has gone thus far. And possibly the biggest they faced during the regular season. Now, the wins didn't come easy, which makes the fact that both remain among the elite group of 5 unbeatens are even more meaningful. Washington trailed Utah less than 3 minutes of the game. Huskies never able to put away their conference foes. Chris Peterson's team only built a lead of larger than 7 points once, remained tied with the Utes until deep in the fourth quarter, and that's when Dante Pettis's 58-yard punt return touchdown with 3:25 remaining gave Washington the lead for good. But I must say, what Washington is doing is very impressive. Clemson continues to win. Those two teams continue to get dubs. And also, when it comes to the Big Ten, how about Wisconsin beating previously unbeaten Nebraska 23-17, the final of that one. Nebraska, number 7 in the nation. Wisconsin now strengthens its case to possibly set up a rematch against Michigan in Indy for the Big Ten championship. And I thought that was a very impressive win by the Badgers, Isaac.
Well, you hit all the points. Wisconsin, don't rule them out. And I'm 100% serious when I say this. Out of a college football playoff spot, that number 4 spot, if a bunch of teams lose and Wisconsin's able to overtake Michigan, and I am assuming it will be Michigan after how Ohio State's played recently in the Big Ten championship game, watch out. This is a team that could sneak into the 4 spot. I've just got a couple of soothsayings that I like to purvey over the airwaves. One, mark my words, Clemson is overrated. They're winning way too close of games. They remind me of Florida State right after Jameis Winston led this team to a national championship. I think they go down in the first round of the college football playoff and actually fairly handily. I do think they make it. I think Louisville is by far the better team than Clemson, although they didn't look good today. I think Washington and Alabama are the two best teams in the country because they're the only ones who have consistently shown me the ability to win large and in close games to pull it out. So those are my two favorite teams. And it also shows me, Al, we didn't have a game that a top 5 team played this entire week that was decided by double digits.
Yep.
The whole field is diluted with the exception of Alabama. And we'll see how good and what their mettle is this weekend when they play LSU.
It's our second break. When we come back, we will close out the show with brief thoughts on the Detroit Lions, as well as, with it being Halloween, who are the scariest athletes of all time? Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKER, Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Just 5 minutes left in this Halloween edition here on WKAR AM 870. Brief thoughts. Detroit Lions, of course, fell to the Houston Texans on the road on Sunday afternoon. Theo Riddick, I thought, had a good day. Of course, after missing 2 games due to an ankle injury, 11 carries, 56 yards. Eric Ebron, 7 catches for 79 yards. Thought those two had great offensive performances, but 8 penalties and the Detroit Lions converting just 27%. Just 27% of their third downs, that hurt. And also, I want to call out these two coaching mistakes, and I'll go into more depth during tomorrow's Current Sports. But why not? Why didn't Jim Caldwell challenge the DeAndre Hopkins incompletion midway through the fourth quarter? That was huge. Huge. It looked like he was. And then all of a sudden, you know, the next play goes, and that's it. It goes up in smoke. And what happens? The Texans end up getting 3 points out of that possession. Mind-blowing. And why an onside kick with 2:53 left to play in the game and down by a touchdown? That, to me, showed no trust in that Detroit Lions defense. They had 3 timeouts, all 3 of their timeouts still, yet you go for an onside kick, you shorten the field, and the Texans end up just running out the clock. I don't understand that. All right, 3 minutes left. Each and every Halloween, we love to do this, folks, and it's a cool segment. With Halloween, of course, the mantra of Halloween being spooky and scary and dressing up and so on and so forth. Who exactly are the scariest athletes of all time? Here we go. All right, so who exactly are the scariest athletes of all time? Well, this is my list, and I don't think my list has changed in quite some time, Isaac. At number 5, I have Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson standing at 6'10" on the mound, very intimidating build as a pitcher, very tall, and he had one of the meanest mugs in baseball history, dude. I mean, not you won't find many pitchers scarier than him, all right? Number 4, Ronnie Lott. Played his career as a cornerback and safety. Hit like a linebacker, though. I mean, how many times have we seen Ronnie Lott light up somebody, right? 10-time Pro Bowler, 9-time All-Pro, won 4 Super Bowls. I mean, he was fantastic. Fantastic player, and there's many players that have gone on record to say that Ronnie Lott was a feared man on the gridiron. Brock Lesnar, 6'3", 265, of pure aggression. All right, of course, he was in the WWE, went to UFC. Just a very intimidating guy and also very built as well. Lawrence Taylor, LT. Need I say more there? He's number 2 on my list. I mean, one of the hardest hitting men and biggest trash talkers in football history. Number 1, Mike Tyson. Quite possibly the most feared boxer in the sports history. Isaac?
Yeah, I didn't compile a list necessarily, but Lawrence Taylor is up there for me. So is Brock Lesnar. I also throw LeBron James in there. You're going to laugh at this. In terms of athletes, yeah, athleticism.
No, I'm not fearing LeBron James.
But when it comes to an actual player, you're going to laugh at this. A soccer player, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He has a black belt in all forms of martial arts and a nose which is the size of a ship. He'll just go toe-to-toe with you, nose-to-nose, and he'll beat the crap out of you.
I have to look him up. I didn't even get the name. That name was just so crazy.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Wow, what a name. All right, folks. Well, hey, have a happy Halloween out there. Be safe. Don't eat too much candy, all right? Cavities are real. We'll be back at the same time, same place tomorrow. Be easy, people.